Thank you. You gave me context to make my brain work.
Exactly. Need a bit of context. And we're going to have to give a bit of context to the audience as well.
Nah, they can guess. It's fine. Well, I'll let you repeat what you had because I really, yeah, you can start.
Yeah, you like that bit. So, a bit of background. In my undergrad degree, there was what's called a philosophy of practice. We were always told to try and create a philosophy of practice, write it down, or at least have it in our head so we know what it is. And what that basically means is we have a framework, a philosophy, an idea, a collection of morals and ethics that guides our practice. I'm going to coach this way, not that way, because I believe in these things, most of the time justified by evidence or research or some logical rationale, rather than I was coached that way, so I'm going to do it like that. It's not necessarily the best way to coach. And what I was thinking is, okay, philosophy of practice, I have one in coaching. I have one in the way that I work in life. What about productivity? Do I have a productivity philosophy? When I asked myself that question, I had a lot of answers, and yeah, I do. And then the extension to that, which John went, oh, at, was, okay, if I have a philosophy of practice, does the content I consume match or like go against, like, clash with my philosophy? Do I ask a question? This is like a rhetorical question with me, but do I ask a question when I consume content? Does this match my philosophy? If not, then what's the content doing? Like, what am I doing with it?
I like that. Because I don't think you actually said quite those words
No.
when we were speaking before, but it's like, does it match? Is it in antithesis to what we have? Or and I think there is benefit to consume content that is in antithesis to what we believe, as long as you're consciously aware that actually you are it's purposeful.
But right there, you've assumed that we know if it agrees or disagrees, which means
Yeah,
we've made
that is assuming you do know
yeah, that means we've made
what
the
you're.
decision. But most of us, I don't think, are. Like, when we look at, I don't like bringing up politics and things like that, but when we bring it up, we know in our heads what we typically agree with or disagree with. So we know, okay, I'm likely to agree with that, I'm likely to disagree with that. When you look at a productivity video, do you have the same thought? I would imagine no. I would imagine you'd go, I don't know, I'm going to watch it and see what they say. But you don't have in your head where you stand already. So you don't know whether you're going to agree, disagree. And I think the danger of that is because you're going in blind, you don't know whether to go, okay, I know they're going to be slightly different, but let's consume what they're going to say. And because we're human, knee-jerk reactions can say, oh, I completely disagree with that, I'm out. And you leave the video
Yeah.
or whatever the content is. You're like, actually, hold up and see what they have to say. See what their rationale or logic is. Because maybe there is some logic that you've just sort of thrown out the window, as essentially.
I think that actually matches the conversation we had in last week's episode on neurodiversity and the labels and what you had on that and what I had on that are still different, but instead of just with the knee-jerk reaction of like, no, you're wrong, which is what I did actually the first time. It was like, yeah, I don't like that, but I don't know why I don't like that. I remember saying that. But I find it interesting when you know what you like, when you're able to just watch something, even with that, like understanding that, hey, I'm probably not gonna agree with this person. But there may be some value and not just throwing everything out. Like, as in everything they say is incorrect because it does not directly match with who, with what I believe in or with my own philosophies. And
Yeah.
that is a fun conversation and something that I'm navigating in my world as well. Of
So
like,
my
yeah.
question would be a philosophy of practice in productivity. I know what it looks like for me. I wonder how that would look like for other people, because to me, my practice and philosophy of practice, I would look at each individual question or decision that I'd need to make. And I have a rationale and some evidence behind why I choose to do the things that I do. So the eat the frog thing of do the most important thing at the beginning of the day. My personal approach to that is I don't like it because I don't like doing the most important thing at a specific time in the day because I can wake up and want to go, but I can also wake up and not want to go. So I don't apply that blanket rule because it doesn't fit every day. That's the evidence that I have, and there's loads of science behind it as well, but we won't go there. But I know when someone starts talking about Eat the Frog, I know I'm going to disagree. But I'm interested to see their rationale and logic behind why it might work for them or why they're supposedly saying it's going to work for you. And it gives me some grounding to start that conversation off from.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it also, with regards to the whole self-help, self-improvement gurus and productivity gurus and all that that's out there, a lot of them, I don't think, have a rationale behind what it is that they're doing, apart from I'm testing it out myself, or I've just learned this myself, which I think is not necessarily dangerous to share, but I think they need to be aware of the dangers that it could hold. Because if people that are going in that don't know what their philosophy is and are blindly following loads of things, I think it becomes a bit of a circle. I don't know what I need to do. I'm going to watch this video, but the advice given in this video, they don't really know what they need to do either. So you're then going down their rabbit hole, and then you go down another one and another, and you're just going to end up going in the circle. And I watched a video documentary from Janny James, I think his name was. I said, why? It was a while back, like a year ago. And he was talking about the self thingy industry. I found this because it was in my notes. It like popped up. It's like, oh gosh, a year ago. And he was saying that the self-help industry want you to need self-help.
Yeah.
You're like, well, duh. So do the self-help industry actually want to help you? I think there are people that do, but I also think there are people that don't.
Yeah. I think the industry, if you go from the tiny individuals in the self-help industry, I'm sure that many of them do want to help. But if you look at the industry as a whole and you go into the macro of it, no. Because if they help you, you don't need them anymore. Or that exactly. Is the view. Yeah. You are no longer needed. And I think in the business world, there is an essence in, especially going down more in like the coaching space. One of the things that I say whenever I'm coaching or consulting or whatever is that I want you to not need me anymore. Because that's what makes me a good coach. That's what makes me a good consultant. I want to create something for you, whether it be a system, whether it be mindset stuff or tools and whatever it may be. I don't want you to have to rely on me, because that sucks. And like when I do system builds for people, there are always instructions on how to do everything. Now, they may choose to still work with me. I have a client right now who they're just not technical focused. They want the systems. They need the systems to help scale their business because the main guy didn't have enough time and the support person was meant to take over. They couldn't. It just wasn't within their wheelhouse and they knew that. And so there is something in place to support them. But still, the whole entire time is they have the capacity to do it themselves. And who knows, in 3 months' time, once they've had some work with us, we're always going to be training them so that they could take it over if they wanted to. Doesn't mean they have to. And I think in the business world, that's not really thought of. It's very much like recurring revenue, keep people coming in, keep people coming back. I would much rather I work with you for 6 months and then you leave and then you are happy, because that is when I know I've done a good job.
Yes.
That is when I know that I have actually helped you, because otherwise it's pointless. Like, I can keep talking to you months and months and months, and yeah, the revenue is good. Don't get me wrong. I get to provide for my family, but it gets dull, because if you're not taking action or there is something that's stopping you and you just want me to give you all the answers, you won't get help. It's not helping. It's just enabling or trying to fix it all for you. When sometimes you just want someone to come in and go, here you go, do this. Then they go do it. And then that's it. And it's done. And it feels good.
Mm. That is something that I was, when I first heard it, I was like, that doesn't really make much sense. It's like, as a coach, you want to make yourself redundant. I was like, what? I don't get that at all. Obviously, I now understand the philosophy behind it. And that right there, I think, is a different philosophy to a lot of business owners. But you recognize you have a different philosophy. You know what that looks like. You know how you're going to act differently because of your philosophy. I wonder if, so in my undergrad, I was always told to write my philosophy down. And I had a philosophy document of coaching. It's very old. It's kind of outdated as well now. But I wonder, with regards to a philosophy in business or a philosophy in practice, whatever that looks like in productivity, is writing it down worth it to articulate what it means? Because I know a lot of us have it in our head, but...
I have it as a yes, because there are so many things going on in our head at once, especially for me, like, and people who work with me, their brains are always going. Like, they never stop. And I think that's true for all humans. But if it's not front and center for me, I'll forget. And so for me, writing it down is one, a creative exercise, because I can really look at it. I look at it and go, is that true? Because when it's in my head, it's swimming around with everything else. But when it's out in the world, in the environment that we're working in, I can see it and I can look at it more critically than when it's in my head. And so when I write out my philosophy, I'm like, okay, is this true? Is this true or is there something missing? Because often what I've experienced as I've been getting in that space of like, what is true, what is congruent, what is the fullness of me? I often pull things out and then go, oh, wait, no, that's not quite right. I was writing a piece of content, and often there are other pieces that come into you and change what you're saying. And I was actually writing a piece of content that when I showed someone else, they were a friend of mine who knows me very well. She went, that's not you talking. There is pieces of you, but the spin is very much something different. So what's going on there? And I think that's been like really valuable, to take what I have in my head out, because we are influenced by everyone around us. We are influenced by the content that we consume. If we are not clear on the philosophy of the content we can, like what that philosophy is, we lose ourselves in it. And then we end up in this consumption cycle of just doing nothing but consuming and consuming and consuming. And I think the advice around like, create more than you consume is not enough. It's missing so much. Like there, it's a spiffy title, but there's nothing wrong with consuming more than you create. It's just being aware of that and being aware. There's not necessarily a problem. I'm not saying that it's always a problem or it always isn't, but it is. Fine. It depends on where you're at. And I think that is something that is missing from the nuance.
I also think that's a good question to have in whatever we're going to call it, a philosophy of productivity, because what content means to some people will mean something different to others. So creating it and consuming it will obviously, the ratio is going to be different. If you class a piece of content as a video or a blog post, then no, you're not going to be able to create more than you can consume. But if content is writing down a note, which that's how I see a piece of content as a note, and it doesn't have to be public, then I can quite easily create way more content than I consume.
That right there, public, because I think that's the assumption that they make with that post.
Mm-hmm.
That is the assumption that I get from that post. Public content.
And it's
different. You must create more public content, and that drives me insane, because the pressure of that sucks.
Yes.
People who struggle with being consistent in the traditional consistent sense. There's another Ship 30 for 30 going on right now. And I would love nothing more but to do that. But quite frankly, I can't. I know that isn't going to help me. I could, but I don't want to. It's not that I can't. I don't want to.
I was going to poke you on that one. Yeah. You got there before me.
I did indeed.
So I guess with regards to moving forwards, I have a philosophy page in my notes. I don't have a philosophy of practice page in my notes, but I've got a productivity page. So I have actually been debating over the last few days through the week. about writing it up and mapping out what I would see as beneficial to me. And because obviously I can link it to all of the research that I've got in my notes. So if someone asks, oh, how do you do that? Or why do you do that? Or those sorts of things. Okay.
Mr. Linky.
Yes. Oh, did you see the thread?
I did.
Yeah.
I did see the tweet.
Yeah, well, they are just all linked.
You have no clue. You have no idea, Nick, what you're doing. You've lost. You've lost before you began.
Yeah, yeah. For context for those listening, Nick Milo, I want to say like creator CEO of Linking Your Thinking. I think that's the business name. I'm not entirely sure. I assume it is because that's what all the courses and stuff are. But he tweeted about zombie notes, and a zombie note being something that isn't linked and isn't used in a while. And because of my philosophy of note taking, my philosophy of practice, I link all of my notes. So I went through my graph after I responded to the tweet. I was like, I wonder, do I actually have any orphans? I have three. One of them is from this vault, which is the marketing thing. So that's not actually my notes. One of them is an Excel document, which I can't link because it's an Excel document. I'd need to embed it into a page. And the other one is the Notion book Word document that, again, I can't link anywhere. They are the only three orphans I have in my entire vault. Everything else is linked at least once, most of the time twice. And that's almost 5,000 notes.
And I'm now just intrigued. And I assume that most of them are linked to the day, that your daily journal page thing, at least.
So I filtered out those because I felt like that was cheating.
Yeah, I was gonna say, I was like, are you cheating and using that one too?
Yeah, no, I filtered out those ones. So all of the source notes are linked to at least one working note. And all of the working notes are linked, obviously, to the source notes, but at least one other working note. Mm. And then my projects, which I still class as working notes, so the video scripts and the blog posts, they are all linked to, obviously, the source notes for those projects. And they're also normally linked to either a working note if it's a bigger project or the actual source note I'm talking about. So the research reviews, that the main link is the research paper. And then any other point that I bring up, I can block reference in. And that actually relates to one of the threads that's been going on my Twitter feed recently around blocks and how blocks work between Rome, Logseq, and Obsidian. And I feel like the feature set, it's certainly not a general pop user feature set thing. Block references. It could be, but I don't think it will be. But the workflows that people talk about, I don't say the workflows, I probably say the features that people talk about that impact their workflows, I don't think we are as aware of the other tools as we could be. I don't know how Logseq and Rome work on blocks, which is why I tweeted it, because I was like, I don't know. But all the responses that I have seen so far about, oh, Rome can do this and Obsidian can't, I'm like, yeah, but it can. It does it like this. And they respond, oh, well, it's not quite the same because of this. And I'm like, yeah, but that's just that. And every time so far I've had a response from a Logseq or a Rome user, the only thing I have found that isn't in Obsidian is the dragging and dropping of blocks, because everything else is in search. Like, I want to look for this block. I want to look for how many times this block has appeared. Yeah, search. It's just all in the search plugin. You don't need to go to a different button. It's all there. The only thing you need to know is if you want to search for a specific term, put it in quote marks. If you want to add a Boolean search, you need to put it in the search. Like, you can't just click a button and filter out for things. But that's it. And yeah, it's one of those, I think, again, going back to our own philosophy, we have our philosophy that's ingrained in our head, but it doesn't mean that we know what others do. It's just like, oh yeah, this is my thing. But you've taken a stance by saying this is what I do, and I think people aren't recognizing that as much as they could do. So that would be my call to action.
it's that's what caught me straight. I was like, oh yeah, I do have a philosophy of productivity. That's interesting. And I have it in my head, but I never have it anywhere else. I have like my business philosophy. It's literally on my page. It needs updating, but I have that on my page. I know like systems are human. That's what I have. But I don't have that anywhere. I don't elaborate on that or expand on that or have anything around that. And I'm like, huh, interesting.
I don't know what it would look like, but if you were to write out your philosophy of practice, which obviously would include productivity, I would imagine it would be kind of like a long document of these are the choices I would make and this is why I would make these choices. I think it could be like, I don't want to say self-help, self-improvement thing, but I think it could be a good, what I would class as a metacognitive task to just go through. Because I know when I was doing my coaching philosophy, I think it was my second year, we had to write it out just as like a quick thing at the beginning of one of the emotional intelligence lectures. And I remember writing it out. And I remember sitting and looking back, I was like, my second point and fifth point are literally the opposite. How can they be doing both? Because they were different points, but they were built on two completely different assumptions of practice. I was like, how can I be doing, making that choice, but also making that choice? There's no logic there. Like, I need to believe one or the other. And that led to quite a big conversation, like mental conversation with myself. I'm like, do I believe that? Do I really believe that? Why do I believe that? And I had to challenge myself, but I didn't recognize that until I actually saw it on the page. I was like, oh, yeah, no, those reasons don't match up. And it's very similar with ecological dynamics and information processing. We can make choices because of information processing and our bias towards the computer as brain metaphor. But we make choices on ecological dynamics. And I obviously, this is something that I do in my head quite often. I'm like, okay, why did I make that choice? Is it because of my assumption of the brain as a computer? Or is it because of my assumption of the brain is more than a computer and looks at resonance and fluid dynamics, etc.? And those are questions that I challenge myself to look at quite often now. But if you don't know what your philosophy is, or you haven't written it down, when I say you don't know, I would probably say you're not aware of. Because we all know it.
Yeah, it's interesting. I hadn't considered it, because I have a business, and if I shift on the business perspective, because your philosophy interacts with everything you do, like whole thing from start to finish. And I think a lot of what is done in business when they talk about frameworks and et cetera, this can help influence that. Of like, when you know your philosophy and you can see it plain on paper, you can challenge your own philosophies, your own belief systems, your own everything, like you were saying. And that creates this, I suppose, framework of working. But understanding how you work, you have a better idea of the, although I hate the word, niche that you're in. Because all of the things of you, all of the pieces of you that come together will match with other people who have similar beliefs as you. That is the natural niche. That is the completely and utterly non-overly structured, non-forced niche that you'll put into. It is something that you actually believe right down to the core. One of the things, an example of this is like, recently I have been exploring this. I didn't realize that I didn't have a name for it, but this is what I've been doing around like system stuff, because let's be honest, for business people, systems are boring. The vast majority of people who listen to this podcast are systems people. They like the systemsy thinking and it's fun for them to do. I would be interested in the stats and the information, so, because I don't have any of that. If you're not a system person and you're listening to that, tell me I'm wrong. Love to know. Like, I am super intrigued to be corrected on that assumption. But it's an assumption I'm standing with right now. But what I find really interesting, lost my train of thought, got way too excited. Yeah, train of thought's gone. Choo-choo.
Okay. Do you want me to try and help you recover?
Yes, that'd be good.
So you were talking about your processes and how some people are systems, some people aren't systems. Like some people see the systems, some people don't see the systems.
Yes, thank you. Caught myself. Thank you very much. Thank you. I appreciate it. And systems is hard to sell. Systems aren't sexy. It's so much more fun to be able to sell, you know, other things that are sexy, like, you know, offers and Instagram templates, because you can see it. Whereas systems are so like up here and not really clear, except they are fundamental to running a business. Now, does that mean you need to have all of the tech, all of the this, all of the that? Not necessarily. But systems are inherently human. And if you're running a human-focused business or a human type of business, then you need to have systems in place that support that. And it really revealed to me, going back to the niching thing, of like, I am not a tech VA. And often systems are lumped into the tech VA personality and thing. Because it's like, oh, you're a system, you like tech, you can put systems together. No, it's beyond that. And that's something that I experienced in my business of like, this is actually where I'm at. This is what people, this is the assumptions made that actually I'm a tech VA who can just do systems and put pieces together. And that is not to say that's a bad thing at all. I don't have that's bad. It just is what is. But it's a whole nother layer on top. It is a whole nother environment that I'm working in, another system that I'm playing in. It's a beyond just setting up a piece of tech. And so for me, that's actually helped me niche down. But it's natural niching, not forced. Often what I see in the business world is people forcing themselves to go into demographics, even though people say, oh, you don't need demographics and psychographics and exographics and PQ graphics. But the problem with that is that you're not aware. And I think, like, my assumption that I'm making here is that with a philosophy of practice or having that, it will help you to niche, whether that be down or up is irrelevant, but you have that unique philosophy and perspective that you can share. It makes creating content a hell of a lot easier because you have these things that you can talk about because you know them, because you can see them. And as your philosophy may change or evolve, it can evolve with you. And I think that is something that's quite fascinating from a business perspective. So much so, I'm probably going to clip this whole section out and put it on my podcast because otherwise no one will listen to it. Once again, tell me I'm wrong. I would love to be told I'm wrong. But I think that is really important, like from a business-focused perspective, as well as a productivity perspective, because once you know those pieces, once you know what your philosophy is, it can influence what you read, what you consume, and how you interact with what you consume as well. It's just, yeah, fascinating. I love it.
Yes, I agree. I will add something to it as well. Make sure you note that down so you don't forget to clip it, by the way. Otherwise, you will forget. With regards to the framework and the philosophy and the somewhat dichotomy between the two, because I think a framework and a philosophy can be seen as drastically different things. I think, as you mentioned, a framework is built from a philosophy.
Yes, exactly. They are kind of an evolved form. It's like you have your philosophy and you build a framework around that philosophy. And that is a natural flow, not something that is this mystical thing that you've got to pull out your ass.
And that right there is, I think, what we bring up quite a lot here with regards to the gurus, the advice, the context, blah, 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 is they have a framework that's built from their philosophy, but their philosophy often isn't articulated and your philosophy may be different. So yes, your behaviors could be different because of your philosophy, because of whatever other reason, but the framework that you're trying to map to doesn't quite work because it doesn't fit you, the decisions you make, et cetera, et cetera. But if you're not aware of the decisions that you would make, then you need to try and work out why the framework doesn't work. And you can't work out why something doesn't work if you don't know why it doesn't work in the first place.
Yeah. And I think this just goes back to everything that we talk about and everything that I talk about in my business and what you talk about, what we talk about here and what you talk about. It's so much like there is when we talk about context, that is the distilled version of that is the simple explanation of what that means, and that's quite exciting. Going back to our jargon episode, context, if you break that apart and you really take it what it means, it's a philosophy. It is what you do and how you do it and why you do it.
I must admit, the thought that comes to mind when you say context, obviously leans coaching, but leans to the environment, leans to what the environment is, what it means, etc. And when I think about a philosophy of practice, does it change in the environment? Yes. How does it change in the environment is my next question. And I don't know if everyone will have an answer to that. And this is something that I started thinking about while I was thinking about this yesterday, watching YouTube channels, is, well, each YouTube channel gives out advice, gives out, you should do this, you should try this, or they vlog their advice and say, I do this and you should do it too. Not necessarily those words, but very similar too. And some of the bigger creators as well do the same sorts of thing, is they share their framework, their 1, 2, 3 step, 5 step, whatever thing. But it changes over time. And what they're actually talking about is not a framework, is their channel, is their philosophy of practice, but not articulated in a philosophy. It's articulated in guidance and advice. And so the question that came to my head was, why are we articulating a philosophy as advice if it's philosophy? Is it because we are not aware of it as a philosophy? If so, why are we talking about it as advice?
My brain just went, that's one hell of a killer YouTube channel. Like, having it as a philosophy basis versus what you should do.
Instead of tips and tricks, this is my philosophy around this thing. This is why it is. It will change because of this, this, and that. What about you?
Yeah.
It would be an ongoing conversation because our prior knowledge, our expectations, preconceived notions, all of that sort of fun stuff, it's going to be individualized. How do you diversify productivity information? By having a philosophy of practice that you have, that you can discuss with everyone else. And I say discuss, but I want to emphasize that it's a discussion. It's an ongoing conversation. It's not a finite thing, which is what I see in a lot of comments, that they either agree or they disagree with whatever advice, tip, trick, thing was there. Or I can see that, like, what does that mean? Like, actually have a conversation about it. Would it work for you? Does it work for you? Are you just saying that because you want to comment? Like, what does it mean? What's the point?
Yeah. What do you have? Yeah. Kind of thing.
It does bring up the conversation around the whole, like, cancel culture, arguing online thing, where discussions should, in my opinion, have disagreement. If it doesn't have disagreement and everyone agrees with everyone, then the world is not going to be a better place because not everyone is going to agree. So there needs to be disagreement, but the environment needs to be, using a term from practice, psychologically safe. You need to be safe enough to put your response, to put your thoughts out there. There are some comments that I get on my channel that I vehemently disagree with, but I'm still open enough with that person to have a conversation about it. And I will say 95% of the time, yes, that's an arbitrary stat, but I've only had one experience where I haven't changed the person's mind. And I've spoken to every person that comments on my channel. So I'm going to put 95 because I think that's a good rough estimate. but all those conversations, once I've explained the rationale behind the logic, they comment going, oh, I get it now, or I understand, or oh, that makes sense. So they've had a question about my philosophy because of the video that I've shared, and they've disagreed. And some of them are using choice words in their disagreement. but I still engage with that and have a conversation with that. I don't just shut it out because, oh, no, I disagree. I want to have that conversation. I want to have that discussion, even if it is a bit like friction heavy, which some of them are quite friction heavy. But that's where I think the benefit happens. Not in, hey, do my tip, trick, hack, framework thing. No, this is my philosophy.
But once again,
do you agree?
But once again, it's not sexy.
No.
It's not seen as sexy. We just want answers. That is the common, it's the blue pill, red pill thing that we've spoken about so much. People just want answers. And even, or answers that fit what they want without fully knowing what they want. That is an assumption I'm making, but yeah.
Yeah, no, my head's going somewhere else, which is why I'm all over. With regards to politics, because there is no answers in politics, that's why it's politics, they are sharing their philosophy. That is what politic content is. They're sharing their philosophy. Yes, they can put makeup on it, make it look better or different. They can polish it as much as they want, but at the end of the day, all they do is talk about their philosophy, their views, their morals, their ethics, and you either disagree or disagree. So I don't know. Again, this is me talking.
Do you mean disagree or agree? I just want to check.
Oh, disagree or agree. Yeah, sorry. My head was in like the next paragraph of the sentence. So I don't know whether it would be possible. Well, I know it would be possible, but I don't know whether it would be a useful or viable option. But the politics of productivity, rather like as a philosophy of practice, if you take it from a political perspective, not from like a laws and that sort of stuff, so forget that. But what are your politics about productivity? I don't know what that would look like, because most of the time in politics you have two sides. You have someone that's really, really one side, really, really the other side, and people trying to figure it out in the middle.
Yeah.
And those conversations, a lot of the time, are people figuring it out in the middle. Productivity, for whatever reason, is this is the advice. And when you actually look at the channels, most of the advice people are given is the same thing. They spout out the same stuff. Use a calendar. Use a task app. Cool. Where's context? Where's nuance?
Because it's not easy. Because my assumption and suspicion is because nobody, I mean, I think you, me, and Layla have had this conversation before. Nobody wants to talk about that. Nobody seems to want that in terms of as a business and content as a business. Like, people don't want that. They don't, it doesn't do well. It doesn't make a difference. But I say that, and I also have that this podcast is still going and is actually really quite popular. popular. It's got a small following, but we have people who are coming along. So maybe that is an assumption that we have made.
And the reason I want to agree with you and like push on that is when you look at politics and all the content around politics, what they do is they take a topic, a hot topic most of the time, because you know, politics and content, and they take a side and they argue for the side. And what that does is it pisses off other people that disagree, but it also reinforces like the tribal instinct of those that do agree. And I think that is in productivity. When you actually look at it, Rome is a cult. People either love Rome or hate Rome. There's very rarely a middle ground. There are people in the middle ground, but the middle ground isn't spoken about. It's I use Rome, I don't use Rome. I use Notion, I don't use Notion.
Yeah.
If those, I don't know what other term to use, but those political conversations, those philosophy conversations were had, and instead of it being Obsidian's bad because of, or Rome's bad because of, there could actually be a conversation there rather than just slanting at. What about?
And I think that is kind of where my business has gone.
I don't,
because I was very politically charged around Notion and how amazing Notion is and how perfect Notion is and blah 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 blah. When I sat with it, and after the experience I had with my clients, and just when I learned more, it wasn't about Notion. It was never about Notion for me. It was about discovering how you work and the way that you work. And Notion is one avenue of doing that because of its flexibility, because it provides options that at the time tools like Trello and Asana and task management apps and all of the other ones that I can't think of right now. Thinkific
course platform. Are you talking Tick-Tick? Yeah.
You know, Tick-Tick.
One you were thinking of?
I think it was Todoist I was thinking of.
Okay.
All of those platforms that exist didn't have, and that is my philosophy, is that the limited, that was, everyone was making an assumption that they had to work a certain way because that was just what was popular. It's like simple, minimal, this, that, this, this should be what it should be. That is what it should be. And Notion unlocked a lot for a lot of people of like, hey, I don't actually have to work in a list. I don't actually have to work with deadlines that are fixed. I don't actually have to learn and habit force myself to learn how, like, when a date is due, or I don't have to see information in only one way. And the best way is only to have one way. Notion unlocked options and opportunity, which I think is what affordances. Yeah.
Yes.
It unlocked affordances for people. And I think that is what I have on why I do the business that I do now. It started with Notion, but it was never, ever about Notion. It was about the affordances of being able to work your way and being able to figure out the way that you work and then build something around that and create something around that. Whether that be in Trello or Airtable or whatever app it may be, if that is what you want to do, then that's what you want to do. And you feel that benefits you and you need more constraint, then that is great and go for it. But if you don't, then there are options. And I think that is quite an exciting thing to have. And that's where my philosophy shifted.
I think what Notion and apps like Notion do, all the apps under the sun, is they constrain the environment you're working in, which allows you to see the affordances of the app. Once you have what I would class as like attuned your skills in the tool, you can then start exploring other things, which is what like people like us do, because we've got a level of expertise in the tool that we're using. We can explore other tools and look at other affordances that those tools allow, and then potentially bring things back, move things forwards, etc., and explore. But like you say, that is built on a philosophy of practice that we use to get stuff done. Like the getting things done methodology is more than a methodology. It's a way of looking at tasks. Like you are categorizing tasks in a certain way to do a method. But if you don't categorize a task in the same way, well, how would you do it next?
And that, and this is a, like, para is a really good example of this, mm-hmm. for me. I flipping hated para. Now I swear by it. And the only reason why, let me clarify. But for a specific use case, and that is file management. That is file management. It is not, I do not have that it is a productivity, like task organizational thing, a project management thing. I don't have that it's that. It is a small piece. And and for me, para is great because I added a layer on top that made sense to me. And that was time of like interaction. So for me, a project is very much, I'm touching it quite a bit. I'm going in there. I'm interacting with it nearly every day, every week. Once it goes beyond a certain point, it gets moved, or it's something that keeps going forever and is something that I'm touching every so often, it moves into an area. Sometimes I don't go through the process of 1, 2, 3, 4. Sometimes I just go from 1 to 4. So 1 is projects, 4 is an archive, because I'm not touching it. I don't need it anymore. It's not, but it needs to be there, and I don't need to touch it right now. And I have that philosophy of 1 to 4 for me.
That's the same as Tiago. That's what Tiago talks about. But I think because Tiago talks about it in his course and he doesn't emphasize it that much, people don't know it.
Like, yeah, and that is frustrating, because and people have started looking at it and like, oh, I'm going to organize everything like this. And I'm like, no.
There are philosophies behind everyone's framework. And if you don't know what the philosophy is, it's very hard to apply the framework, which is where I recognize this is probably where like the course content and stuff comes in. But from my experience with the courses that I've done and the conversations that I've had with creators and people that have taken courses, they don't emphasize the bits that people get confused on. They emphasize the bits that people have seen. It's like para, yeah. People have seen it, so they talk about para. But they don't talk about the misconceptions that happen within para and the philosophy behind it. And we know in educational science, the misconceptions are the main thing that you need to challenge for conceptual change and for consolidation of deep understanding. But it needs to be there. Otherwise, misconceptions are going to create issues, behavioral issues, or just troubles adopting a system because they have misunderstood something. But if you don't challenge the misconceptions, the misunderstandings, the misperceptions, or anything like that of your philosophy, well, then it's not going to be helpful. And those conversations are the conversations that I think would be interesting to see in content online more, rather than everyone doing the same effing thing of going, hey, use a calendar app. Okay, great. Yeah, everyone can figure that out. I did this with a couple of videos yesterday. I typed in the title of the video to Google to see what recommendations came up. And I was like, I wonder if this person is going to say these top five things that Google have said. And they did. It was literally in the list. I don't know whether, but it was like four videos in a row. I was like, so if I can Google the answer to this question and get the answers in seconds, or I could watch four YouTube videos that are like 10, 15 minutes long each, 45 minutes for a Google search. And there was no context or nuance given. It was just different music in the background, different B-roll put on top of their faces talking. Like, that's entertainment. Great. Yeah, but it's not helpful.
I saw a review. So I'm currently doing a sponsored review for an app. And I went and looked up other reviews to see what it was. And I probably saw the most disgusting video I've seen in a while. And it was like disgusting for me, meaning everything was just like sounds. And I was basically, my whole entire system was being attacked by as much as possible to trying to have my, I was being hacked. They were trying to hack my attention and I could feel it. And it really beat me off. It was like, look, you great. You got foghorn sound effects. You can put those in. Good for you. Congratulations. Oh, wow. You zoomed in slightly on the video. Just go to hell. Stop it. I'm not interested in your video. You are just peeing me off because you're not giving me what I want.
As a creator, it's hard to find that balance. And that's one thing that, for those watching my channel will have noticed, I've stripped back literally everything. Literally everything. When you click on the video, you know exactly what you're going to get. You're going to get me talking about a paper, or you're going to get me talking about a topic. And what I've recognized in my own content is that the flashy, it's not flashy, but it's that sort of style of content with the whole fancy B-roll and the music, and that's an entertainment video. That's what I see it as. And I was trying to do the entertainment with the knowledge and learning and stuff. But it's very hard to do that and get that right. And the reason I say it is because the people that want to learn don't want all the educational fluffy stuff. But the people that potentially need to learn, I say need in quotes, they want all the fluffy stuff because they think they know, or they don't care too much about the content as much. I was having this conversation with another creator, YouTube creator, and there are videos that I watch of some people and it's like 10 minutes of them talking, but there's not really anything said. Like they don't say anything. They just talk, but they get loads of views on the video because it looks good and looks nice. You're like, he didn't really say anything. Whereas my content is the opposite. I'm saying loads, which is why I think people struggle to consume some of my content, because I've spoken to a few people that watch most of my content and they're like, yeah, I need to turn my brain on. I'm like, good, good. I want you to be switched on. Yes, that's a limitation. No, I'm not going to get like millions of views on a video where people have to actually think. God forbid them think. Who, what? but that's the approach I've taken. And I recognize the limitations, but I also recognize what it means that I'm doing with the stuff that I'm talking about. And just to clarify, because Tiago tweeted about this, I can't remember when, like, I think it was this week, was saying that you need loads of money and big production teams to be big on YouTube. No, you don't. No, you don't. And I will say that. And one example that comes straight to mind, Gotham Chess. He sits in front of a camera, he talks about a chess game for half an hour, and then stops recording. He doesn't edit it, he doesn't pre-script it, he just looks at the game beforehand, goes, okay, that's some cool stuff, and talks. That's it. He does daily videos, he's got a million subscribers, get 200,000 views a video. That's it. The only work he pays for is the thumbnail design. That's it. So you don't need background music. You don't need flashy B-roll. You don't need the sound effects. What you need is content that's useful. but
and it's got to fit the
easy to find.
I think there is additional context to what you're saying, which I think isn't shown with what you just said. There is, like, it depends on the audience.
Yeah.
Just to clarify that, really, because chess people are nuts. Like, you know, they are.
A lot of them are younger than you think as well.
I know. Like, chess people are so, like, I just want it that they are. When I tried chess, I couldn't do it. I loved the idea of chess. I wanted to do chess. But, like, I just couldn't. I wasn't enjoying sitting there analysing B2 to B4 or whatever the bloody hell. That's not even a thing that I can. I found that so hard and I wasn't interested.
I think this, again, comes down to the learner's journey and the content and whether the learner's journey matches the content.
Yeah.
Because the reason I think Gotham Chess does so well as a chess channel is because he doesn't go in as much depth as others. Like, if you look at Hikaru or...
Daniel Marinescu. I can still watch, like, Gotham Chess.
They're like... arrows and shit, they're like 10 moves in the future. I'm like, I don't even know why you did the second move, you know, leave me alone. but Gotham is, he's making light-hearted jokes whilst analyzing these complex chess positions, and he recognizes his own incompetence in positions, and he even says it in the videos. He's like, yeah, I don't know why they did this, they're it don't make sense. I think there was like a running joke on his channel for a while, like a GM at some point will play h something 4, 5, 6 where you push the pawn up, and like, okay, cool, and it just became a running joke. I have no idea why they do that. It's not gonna help me in chess whatsoever, but it was fun. And that's what I meant by it. The content itself is valuable. He's making something which is arguably quite boring fun.
Yeah.
He's not doing it with all the flashy stuff. He's just talking about stuff. And I've actually been watching quite a few channels recently. They lean politics, but some of it isn't intentional. They're just talking, but because they're talking off the top of their head or from a bullet point, they lean into talking conversations about politics because they're talking about social issues. As soon as you talk about social issues, politics has to be involved somewhere. And you start to see their side of view. But the videos are very stripped down. I've watched very few recently anyway, very few what I would class as traditional YouTube videos with the whole fast-paced editing, words in your face, sound effects stuff. It just, I can watch it, but I'm more likely to watch a 15-minute guy talking about a paper than I am a Mr. Beast video with, like, this amazing money being spent everywhere. Maybe it's because I'm boring, but
here's the interesting thing. I don't mind Mr. Beast's videos.
Oh, I can watch him and I don't mind him.
No, but I don't hate them. I like his videos. They're funny. They're enjoyable. They're entertaining. But what I don't like was that video where it was all... What I think, what my assumption would be, is they've just taken what Mr. Beast does and just thrown it without any consideration for the people that are watching and just think, oh, I need to go viral to find success. I need to go viral on YouTube to find success. That's an assumption. I need to put loads of flashy things and punch them in the face every 5 minutes. Like, I don't feel punched in the face every 5 minutes with Mr. Beast's videos. I know it's flashy.
But that's, I think, because of his philosophy of content creation. I don't know how much most people probably won't have listened to, like, his philosophy of content creation, but when you actually listen to it, it's more than just the sound effects and the music. It's building a story. It's building a narrative through those things. So why is he in his face zooming back out? Well, he wants to show that he is really a small thing in this massive environment. So the effect means something in the story and narrative he's telling in the video.
Yeah.
There is loads of effort put into his videos to make it a narrative and a story that fills the philosophy, which has all the other stuff.
Yeah. And people only see the flashy, like, pom, 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 punching stuff up all the time and all of that. They see that because they see the video editing technique as the philosophy, when really it's only
a technique to help the philosophy.
yeah, it only helps the philosophy. It's kind of a tool. And
that's what we're talking about, though. Framework. Yeah. It is a framework of building a video, but the framework is built on a philosophy. If you have a different philosophy but use the same framework, it doesn't work because the decisions you make are built from a different philosophy. They don't match. So there's conflict, and that conflict is where the audience, you, goes, they like this.
Yeah.
I think that matches with everything we've spoken about today, like philosophy of practice. Understand why you're making the choices you're doing. And do you have a rationale behind them? You don't, and I'm going to say it, you don't have to find a rationale behind the choices you're making. Just be aware of them. It could be something that you look to explore, but that would be part of your reflective practice.
You don't have to have all the answers to why, like you were saying. It's like, the act itself of just writing it down is exactly what we're talking about. We're not necessarily talking about the bit that comes after. It's the, let's actually put down what we have to see what we have. Rather than let's put down what we have to make it better. This is not necessarily, and does not have to be, it doesn't need to be a self-improvement exercise. This isn't really a self-improvement exercise. It is just awareness.
Yeah.
I think given the audience, the assumption of the audience we have, who are people who want to do better, be better, have better, et cetera, et cetera. I want to look at that.
Learners.
Yeah. We have learners in the audience. And so it is very, like, just in the act of doing it,
mm-hmm.
you are gaining a lot.
Yeah, I think
if you want to go further, do it. But
I was going to say, I think if you do want to go further, they would, like, the questions that come up in writing your philosophy would be the questions to look at in whatever it is, like your journal prompt, your reflective practice, your that sort of stuff. Which again, I think is one of those things inside of the productivity space that isn't covered. Like, oh, you should journal every day, but about what?
About. Yeah, I hated that. That bugged me. It's like, well, what about? Like, tell me, well, what questions should I ask? Oh, okay, here's a list of questions. I don't give a shit about any of those questions.
Like, you just end up writing like the same stuff. You're like, oh, yeah, that'll do. Yeah, that'll do. And it becomes a chore. You're like, oh, yeah, I need to answer those questions.
What are your daily gratitudes? Well, why do I need to write my daily gratitudes? Like, science have said it's beneficial. Okay, that's nice and all. Yeah, just because science says it's beneficial doesn't mean that is something that I want to do. Oh, here he comes. I just had to just wind him up. Ah, there you go.
Yeah, fucking science says, give me the evidence. Oh, I really want to do a video ranting about this, but I feel like I don't want to target people, but there are so many people. Science says, evidence shows. No, it doesn't. No, it doesn't.
It's your fault. You've ruined it for me now. Because every time someone says, oh, studies have shown, which study?
But it's not even like which. It's not even which study. Sometimes they cite the same, like, oh, cool, I'll have a look at the study. And they haven't even read the effing study. Like, no, what you've said doesn't match what the study says. You've just put a study in there. Whether you've done it arbitrarily or if you actually looked at the conclusion, you'd know. I don't want to insult the person, but you'd know you're incompetent because you haven't interpreted the information the way that they've written it. You have four authors that are experts in this field most of the time. I will caveat that most of the time. And they have written a conclusion for you, but they've also written three other pages of a discussion, which brings in nuance and context. If you don't read the nuance and context, the conclusion isn't going to make sense. And if you just use the conclusion, you're going to look stupid if someone like me reads the research and they're going to go, what are you talking about? So no, science doesn't say. And what I guess I'll add to that is when people say science says, look at the context of the science, because if the sample size is like four people, it's useless. It's crap science. And the quality of science is obviously a conversation inside of academia that's massive, but outside of academia isn't covered much. Like, the methods matter, the sample matters, the bias matters, the conversations matter. So if you've got someone that says science says that doesn't explain the nuance of the science, then I am going off on a rant. But yeah, if they don't explain the nuance of the science, then they're not saying science. Or like, what they're saying is someone else said, which is an opinion. And opinions are useless most of the time when you're referencing them, because they don't know what they're talking about. They don't know the actual science, the facts, somewhat facts, truth, somewhat truth, the research, the evidence, the meta-analysis, the system analysis. Like, they just don't know it. Yeah.
Good,
it's irritating. I tweeted about this and put exclamation marks about this because it's so annoying.
Wow. Exclamation marks. I'm serious.
I know. It was like capitals, exclamation marks.
Capitals.
Yeah.
Capitals. Wow.
I got a load of people that responded and they were like, yes, I agree. But it doesn't matter because no one does it. And this is one of those philosophies of practice that is a philosophy that other people, I think, should have. And this is one of those things where I think they have, like, they want to use science. They want to have a rationale. They want to be logical in their reasoning. And in their head, they might have a logic, but they don't talk about it. And that's where the philosophy of practice isn't being pushed in the content, which is what I want to see.
Yeah.
Crash Course is a perfect example. Yes, some of their research is outdated, but I know it's outdated because I've gone and done the research, and now I can alter what they've said because the videos are like 5-6 years old now. I'd be like, oh, okay, right, that's what it was like then. This is the research. Oh, this is a new paper. I'll have a look at that. Oh, okay, I see how it's evolved. Other videos, oh, science says where, what, who, how. Like, you're just giving an opinion. Maybe a hot take here, but I think most productivity channels are vlogging channels. Like, they're not productivity channels, they're just vloggers.
Got productivity people listening to this? Woo!
They just talk about their life. You're like, cool, great. Doesn't help me. I'm not you.
Yeah, I mean, that is an important thing. Like, you're not. But I think going back to our own, like, this conversation of, like, is that on the responsibility of the creator?
Partly, yes, because if they don't explicitly say that this is my experience and they try and put it off as fact or as the right answer, then I think they're creating issues with other people.
Yeah.
And I think that's down to the narrative that they share their opinions and experiences with.
I'm a really high level this person type of person, which you assume is going to mean I'm good.
Exactly. I was a doctor, and I'm going to say doctor because the amount of effing doctors that vlog their life and say I'm productive using Notion, and you go, oh, okay, you're productive using Notion making notes. How many notes do you have? Do you take notes? No. So you're not productive taking notes with Notion then, are you? So you're talking out your ass. Sorry, I've heard so many doctors say that. Like, oh yeah, I'm really good at revising in Notion for my doctor whatever test, blah blah blah. Oh, okay, what flashcards? Anki. Oh, okay, so that's not Notion. What notes do you have in Notion? Oh, you don't have any. Oh, so that's not Notion. So why are you talking about Notion to help you learn? Oh, because they sponsored the video. Then it's not helping you learn then, is it?
It's helping this, which is of course fine, nothing wrong with that. That is important.
Money, if you want the money, cool.
I realize that was not very helpful.
Yeah.
But our audio listeners, I just did the money sign. Like, it's if you are doing it for money, which is fine and not a problem, say that. Don't assume that Notion will work. And to be fair, it may be that they were using Notion at a time, but now they are not.
But I think this comes down to their shallow understanding of what it means to learn. The majority of, I know I've been ranting on doctors, but they are the majority of people online that talk about productivity, self-help. When you look at YouTube, like, I don't know why it's so big. Maybe Ali was like a big role model and everyone's like, oh, Ali can do it. I'm going to do it. That's my guess.
Probably.
But there are so many doctors out there that are talking about learning. But it comes across as they don't have the foggiest about what learning means. Active recall and spaced repetition. Okay, first of all, it's not active recall, it's retrieval practice. Second, it's not spaced repetition, it's practice and repeated practice. And third, most of the things that you're talking about are not new, they're not unique to you, and there is science behind it, but not in the way you're talking about it, because the way you're talking about it is your experience, which doesn't match up with the majority of experiences from other fields and other environments. So you're sharing your experience. You're not sharing the answer or the right way. Just because you have one study that said a conclusion that matches what you've said doesn't mean it's true. That's called confirmation bias, which they're also mostly aware of. They just don't, for whatever, see it in their own work. Oh, I went on a rant.
You good? Did you feel good?
No. I could rant for so long about it, but I know I'd piss a lot of people off. But I guess that's one of those questions that I ask myself quite often. It's like, I have this philosophy, I have this moral, ethical view, but I don't say it because, and then I come up with all these reasons and arguments. Are these reasons and arguments valid?
Mm.
Then that's a question I'm going to have to ask myself a bit more, because maybe people do want to hear the rants of people that are finding trends online.
It's about the psychologically safe, though, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Because if you have a video ridiculing people for not putting in evidence, rationales, science, etc., maybe they won't share their opinions. Now, there is an argument to say that that's a good thing because there's less fake news. I mean, look at TikTok. There is no science, there's no evidence, there's nothing in TikTok. It's literally just opinions and a very quick opinions with no context. So TikTok to me is all entertainment. There is no education on there. Yeah, I know there's like ADHD friendly TikTok channels. Yeah, but there's not enough time in a TikTok to put context in it. That there just isn't.
Yeah, and from a business perspective, that is something that I've been really wrestling with, of like, how can I, because the meta of that is Reels and TikToks. Short, sharp stuff being punchy with no context. So where do you go to find the context? So where is the place to go to find context? Or how can I facilitate context in my audience? And I'm playing with that right now. I found something on Instagram the other day where it's, you have your Reels in the background, which is to draw people in and to grab people's attention. And then the whole homepage, like the actual whatever they're called themselves, is like a landing page where you portfolio? Get more context.
Hmm? Is it a portfolio? I know it was, yeah, with the pictures.
Like the
stuff.
Squares. You know how you have the squares? You don't actually have to post your Reels on the squares, which I did not know that. But like, you can just have it so that there is a big puzzle graphic. And that for me is something that I'm going to be exploring to add more context, because then you can see my philosophy. Then you can see what I do and why I do it and where my bias is. And it gives people the opportunity to delve deeper into the world rather than just having the Reels. And I think also that is where, because I've been thinking, as you know, I've been thinking about my YouTube channel and whether I want to bring it back and what I want to do with it and where I want to go and am I interested in it? And is it something that I have the time and am I willing to put the time in? And how can I put the time in a way that is effective and efficient for me and allows me to do all the things that I want to do? And I'm seeing like there is additional context, the ability to have additional context on my YouTube channel. It is not, if I do bring it back, I'm going to be very purposeful. It's not going to be around hacky, quick tip content. It is very much going to be the philosophy that I have around what I do, around systems are human, around like you are not broken, around all of those pieces of what I do. And that's what the focus will be. And I think it's been nice to actually take a step back, because from a business perspective, the quickest way of success on a YouTube channel is to, you know, reach the 1,000, 40,000 views or whatever it needs to be to get monetized and blah, 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 and all of that.
4,000 hours.
Yeah, 4,000 hours and all of that lovely stuff. And that's fine. But there is also an alternative with YouTube, which I think I may explore, around providing more context for people who want that. Because also there is the side of like people may not want context.
Mm-hmm.
And that's fine.
Yeah, I think the people that don't want the context or aren't looking for the context are those that are just browsing around. And they are the people that are better suited to the ranty, hot take, 10-second clips. So maybe shorter content is... Again, I haven't seen any links from channels on TikTok that do talk about the stuff to give context or education at all. It's just, here's hot takes or here's this thing. But it certainly works. It's certainly useful and people can certainly relate. So, yeah, maybe that would be the next go-to. Maybe an ADHD channel that has a big following on TikTok just needs to put like a link to help. Docs. I don't know, something somewhere. Everyone seems to be making their own content. For whatever reason, everyone in ADHD that I see, like as big creators, seems to be writing their own book. And I just find it really ironic how their entire content is driven around them most of the time struggling to focus, struggling to get started, getting distracted often, and they're writing books, which inherently take a lot of focus, a lot of time, a lot of mental effort, planning, which...
Hyperfocus, hyperfixation.
Yes. That
concept.
But they're all talking, like everyone that I've seen that's writing a book, they're all talking about their struggles of writing the book. And I'm like, it's just interesting to watch these stories develop in that they know they have these struggles and issues, but they're going to write a book, which is one of the hardest things to do with these struggles and issues that they have, which they have said multiple times, but they're doing it. And then they're sharing that they're struggling with it. And it's like in my head, I want to go, well, duh, that's what you're saying. But also I recognize that they are pushing the boundaries to them to help other people, which I'm like, yes, keep going, do it. But it's also like, I'm kind of in this mix of, I want to egg them on and get them to finish the book because I think it will help. But I'm also like, yeah, but you're putting yourself under all this pressure and stress that you're openly saying is stressful and hard to do. But what are you really doing it for? Especially as, from what I've seen, people with ADHD most of the time don't like reading books because they get distracted quickly. So it just makes me question, like, why are these creators making this thing that the people, their audience, will struggle to read? I don't know. Obviously, they have a philosophy and ideology behind it. I just don't know what it is. And I'm, yeah.
Perhaps they're making books that are designed for people with ADHD.
I don't know what that looks like.
No, I don't either. But that is an assumption or a possible option of like...
They've got to make it ADHD friendly in some way, but I don't know how. Especially if they're going to be talking about ADHD and... potential research. I would imagine it's going to be like most of them, I'm guessing, will be like tips, tricks, hacks, what I do type thing. So it, because of my philosophy, I don't know whether it would be an ADHD book or whether it would just be a this is how I work book. Because I think even people without the diagnosis of ADHD will still be able to benefit from it.
Oh, absolutely. Hands down.
So... yeah, I reckon the ADHD thing is a marketing tool rather than a accurate evidence-based thing. But yeah, that comes back to my personal philosophy.
Yeah.
So yeah, if you are interested, I would be really interested to read through some people's philosophies on productivity. If you do fancy writing it up, we're running like a Notion page and share the link on Twitter or something. Because I think everyone's going to have a different philosophy, different meanings behind words, different approaches to thoughts and ideas. So, yeah. I'm certainly going to be writing up mine.
Please.
Yeah, I'm certainly going to be writing up mine at some point.
Yeah, same.
See where it goes, see where it leads.
Yeah, that's pretty interesting. I like that.
Have some trigger questions. What do you think about this? What do you think about this? And then everyone comes up with completely different answers.
Do you have trigger questions already in your head?
Oh, yeah, loads. From my philosophy of practice with coaching, I've got tons.
Perhaps it might be useful to provide those.
Yeah, I could write a list.
As a starting point.
Yeah, I'll do that. Right.
Out in let me give it to me so I can put it on the in the description.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, most of the trigger questions are very, very broad, but they're deliberately broad because you can go in any direction with them.
Yeah. Sounds good.
Nice, right. Did you come up with a closing thingy last week? I can't remember.
What was it? I don't remember it. We did.
Yeah, you came up with a closing thingy. I cut you off halfway through. Because you're like, I was like, oh, you need to be careful about that word because it could be misinterpreted in like two different ways. And we've, yeah, I can't remember.
Was it something about ignorance?
Maybe, yeah. I can't remember. that is literally
that
is us.
So annoying.
That's literally us. Oh, that was that really good thing, but I can't remember.
Yeah. Damn it. Keep it whatever we had it as before. Keep it ignorant. I don't bloody know. Keep it stupid. Keep it stupid. Was it keep it stupid?
Maybe.
Oh, bloody know. Anyway, bye.
Bye.